to Adventures in Pod Taste, the AIPT Comics podcast, the only show from the Adventures in Poor Taste staff, and only show specifically for you, the listener at home. My name is Jason, and I will be here for the next hour speaking with some of the greatest folks that you've ever heard about, like my co-host Dave. Say hi, Dave.
How's it going, everybody?
And joining us tonight is our, for our horror movie themed show, is the horror movie expert of AIPT Comics. That would be Nathaniel Muir. How you doing, Nate?
I can live up to that build, but thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, I try to oversell so that people get their hopes up and then at least get the click, and then they can, you know, pop off whenever they like, and we'll still get all of the listens, at least according to SoundHound.
Because I'm far from the great co-host, but I pretend.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm a mumbler, so the fact that I'm kind of hosting this, even though I, A, mumble, and B, hate my voice, we're all working through some issues here. But beyond those issues, how's everybody doing tonight? How's your week been?
Mine's been pretty good. I'm coming off a 4-day weekend. Over the weekend, I went to the Alamo Drafthouse here. They had the Dismember the Alamo. It was a horror movie marathon. 4 movies, 7 hours. Aside from one movie called Street Trash, I don't know if either of you have heard of it.
Yes.
I read your review, so.
Not a good movie, but otherwise it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I really love Demon Knight, so I always appreciate it. That was the movie that introduced me to Filter, since we were talking about music before we started recording. Not the proudest band that I've ever been into, but I enjoyed Hey Man, Nice Shot.
It was an awesome opening, and that was really cool.
The whole Demon Knight soundtrack is good.
Yeah, it's a solid, like, mid to late 90s hard rock thing. But, you know, that was a good era for movie soundtracks, because that was around the time that we got The Crow, which is probably the best pound-for-pound 90s rock soundtrack that's out there.
Definitely. I love that soundtrack.
Yeah, well, before we get into our movie debate, even though these are going to be about movies, let's talk a little bit about some news that's coming out today. And, of course, if you're listening to us, we are in the future, as far as we're concerned. We're filming this October 25th. You will probably be hearing this on October 30th, the day before Halloween. Hope you guys are enjoying all of that Stranger Things season 2 that you've been binging over the weekend, and all of the candy, presumably, that you're stealing from your kids. But today it came out that through a couple of crazy set photos from Weeping Angel 13 online, it turns out that our good buddy Clint Barton, a.k.a. Hawkeye, a.k.a. Jeremy Renner, may not be Hawkeye in the next movie. A couple of eagle-eyed shots kind of revealed that he appears to be wearing the boots of one of his other many aliases, and dude's been like 15 different characters, but this looks like he may be Ronan, the ninja character in the upcoming Avengers 4. So my question is, guys, what do you think? Do you think that we're going to get Ronan in this? Does it make sense for Clint to eschew the Hawkeye sort of mentality? What do you guys think?
I thought that they would end up killing him anyway. So for him to turn into Ronan, I mean, that's doing something with him. But I don't know. Hawkeye is an okay character, but compared to everything that's going to be going on in Infinity Wars, I see him as being expendable.
I kind of felt the same. Last we saw Hawkeye, he was imprisoned, right?
Yeah, he was one of the Avengers that got pinched by Tony at the end. Well, near the end of Civil War.
I also thought that he was going to... I thought he was going to die then, actually. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him die and then Ronan mysteriously appears.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. My thought process was that he's going to Ronan because everybody knows that he's Hawkeye. And since he's, a fugitive from justice, that might allow him to be like a vigilante and, you know, kind of get away with it as much as any vigilante gets away with it. Because, you know, he's not the maskless dude from that shitty Jason Bourne movie that doesn't even have Jason Bourne. I mean, that was my 2 cents on it. But I mean, it's better than him being Giant Man like he was briefly, or Goliath. That was his name there. When he wore the stupid like He-Man chest protector and one of those masks that only covers the top of your face.
Right.
And like still whites out your eyes like Storm from the X-Men. Or Batman, I guess, is the more famous example of that. But
I just want the damn trailer to come out for everybody to see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There was also, like, you know, there's been a lot of rumblings about what Thanos might be like this week. I remember seeing this piece on Cracked that was supposedly, you know, supposed to blow people's minds, but obviously true nerds know all of this, about how Thanos has an inferiority complex, about how he kind of self-sabotages and wants to lose, and that's probably how he's going to be defeated in this movie. But, like, dude, like, Infinity Gauntlet was in the year, like, 1990, I think. Like, people know this. This is not new information that you're dropping right on us. But I guess, you know, the average person's exposure to Thanos is not what most people's is.
Right. As of right now, he just looks like, well, a badass, essentially.
He's a pruny dude on a like a floating chair, I guess, is what he's mostly been thus far.
That's my definition of a badass.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, it's a nuanced description, but sure.
I was surprised he didn't show up in Guardians at all, the sequel.
Well, I think they had announced that he wouldn't be there, but yeah, it seems like it would make sense to advance the meta narrative of your spacefaring bad guy with your team of spacefaring good guys.
Right.
But, you know, I liked Guardians 2. I thought it was a tight story, and it finally managed to make sense of Ego, the living planet, which was a character that I only knew from, like, the Marvel trading cards back in the day.
Yeah, right.
and then I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of neat, but obviously that's not what he's like in the comic, and the only other time that I've seen him, he dies, I think, and then his son is Epoch, who works with Quasar in the aforementioned Infinity Gauntlet. Full circle. But in other movie news and across the comic spectrum, it also came recently, a series of Chinese posters for the upcoming Justice League film with various silhouettes of the characters in various heroic poses to kind of get you hyped with the tagline, "All in Beijing." And the big news there is that prominently Mr. Henry Cavill Superman depicted right there. So the question, we all kind of assumed that Superman was coming back, and there was that little sequence where Jeremy Irons is talking to the camera, and it's like, oh, he said you might come. Let's hope you can make a difference. Do we think that, because now he's getting his own character poster, do we think that he's maybe, like, bigger in this movie than we've been led to believe?
I always thought Oh, go ahead, Nate.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same as it was before. I don't think he's going to... I think he's going to come in near the end of the movie. I just think it's kind of similar to the Joker advertising that they did for Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. He was all over the place, and he had, like, what, 5-6 minutes in it? It probably will be the same thing with Superman.
But I feel like the news that came out of that was a lot of those Joker scenes, at least according to, like, Jared Leto being upset about it, was that a lot of his scenes got cut. So I think that being Jared Leto, thought that he had a bigger role in the movie based on what he had filmed, but then found out, oh, no, I'm a cameo.
Right.
But the marketing wouldn't have been that would be based on, like, Warner Brothers and not so much Jared Leto, so.
Sure.
But with Superman, I knew that he was going to be in a movie. I think he is going to be a bigger part. I think it will see him a little more before the end. But, I mean, how are you going to have a Justice League movie without having a Superman in it? So, he'll be in there.
I mean, it kind of bothers me in a way. And I'm going to relate this to something that Nate might be able to understand, but Dave, being a non wrestling follower, might not. It's sort of like at TLC this past weekend when, and again, we're filming in the past for any wrestling nerds that are watching this who are going to be like, actually, it was... Anyway, how the two remaining members of The Shield, Seth and Dean, are kind of considered like half-assed jackweeds until Roman's there. Once Roman Reigns shows up, they're able to do anything. Like, the part that particularly upset me this past weekend was that it took both Seth and Dean to spear Kane through the barrier, whereas Roman used to do that shit on his own all the time. Like, it's basically saying these two are as good as one of them. So I look at it then with Superman needs to come in and save all of our heroes because they ain't shit. but Superman will do all the work for him.
Right.
Yeah, that kind of that ruins the whole Unite tagline that they have going also.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, when you have a narrative that's entirely solved by punching, then, you know, that's kind of what you kind of work into. The guy who punches the hardest is probably the guy who you're going to rely the most on.
And I'm not that excited for Justice League, but I figure it can't be as worse as Batman versus Superman, so there's that.
Oh, you think that things can't be as bad as other bad movies, but then you'd be wrong. Like, they can always let you down a little bit more. I don't know. I thought that there was no way that Suicide Squad would be as bad as, like, the reviews had said it was. And I was proven inaccurate. It was pretty shit. But
it was better than Batman and Superman, though.
Yeah, I would say that, but that's a low bar. That's like saying, like, my stomach cancer isn't as bad as my breast cancer. Like, you know, like, they're both bad. Like, it's just because one is aggressive and the other one is not quite as aggressive doesn't, you know, make one good.
And see, I didn't hate Suicide Squad as much as a lot of other people did.
How did you feel about it, Nate?
Just Suicide Squad? I'm speechless. Suicide Squad is horrible. It's horrible. I did prefer Batman Superman, to be honest. The Martha thing was really dumb. The whole build to it was just – it was bad. I mean, they're DC Universe movies. They just – there's nothing really good to say about them. I think Justice League, it's – I saw the runtime, 2 hours and 50 minutes, 3 hours.
Is it right?
I think – yeah, I saw that. So, exactly. Shit. So
I'm not watching we're looking 3 hours of Aquaman.
It's probably going to be like 6 origin stories, and no thank you.
I mean, wow. Well,
it's going to get a bigger draw because of the popularity of Wonder Woman got.
Yeah,
I think Wonder Woman's success is going to help with the success of Justice League.
Absolutely. I think that Wonder Woman... Well, I mean, the good thing is that if we are going to get a bunch of origin stories... We've already seen Wonder Woman and Batman's, basically. Like, actually, we didn't really get a good deal of... Well, I guess we did. They did do a flashback of Batman's parents getting killed, didn't they?
Well, that's in every fucking movie. That's like seeing Uncle Ben get shot over and over.
Which they didn't do in... what's it called? Homecoming, did they?
Homecoming. No, they didn't, which was awesome.
It's probably why that movie is... One of the reasons why that movie is considered so good. I still haven't seen that one, though, so I can't really weigh in very heavily.
Haven't seen Homecoming?
Not yet. It's on demand, so I'll see it soon enough. But,
I'm curious for your thoughts on that.
I'm enthusiastic. I hear great things about Michael Keaton. And I think if he basically is just his character from Birdman, then I'll already like him more than any other Spider-Man villain except for Alfred Molina.
Yeah, he was a good villain. I like Michael Keaton anyways. But, yeah, he did good.
Yeah, he does a really good job.
Cool. So, moving along from those movies to a more themed movie. If you are listening to this on the day it goes live, then tomorrow is Halloween. So, happy early Halloween, folks. Hope you enjoy all of your candies and all of your mischief and all the things that you enjoy on your Tuesday nights. That being said, we brought our good dear friend Nate on to talk about not just horror movies, but... Given that Stranger Things Season 2 premiered on what I guess at this point was this past Friday, we wanted to talk a little bit about 80s horror movies. I'd say a good deal of the people who work on the site and a good deal of the people who probably read us on the site grew up or at least were born in or around the 80s and so have a pretty, like, I guess, sentimental or just a meaningful attachment to that decade. I think all three of us on the line grew up in the 80s, so we have our own pretty staunch opinions on it. And especially all three of us like horror movies, scary movies, anything that's going to make you cringe. And since we're drawn to the close of our 31 days of Halloween, I'm going to start with the broadest question that I can imagine and one that I think that everybody probably has at least a short list of. Guys, what's the best 80s horror movie?
I've been for the 31 days of Halloween. I know, Dave, you mentioned in the last podcast that yours was kind of shot to hell.
Yes, it was bad. Still is.
I've managed to pretty much go through every single day watching a horror movie. It's only 3 days I missed, but I watched Tales from the Dark Side on one of those days. I watched a Ray Bradbury Theater episode on the other day, and then I watched Ray Bradbury again. So the movies I've seen, I'm going to say, are kind of recent, but or recent to me that I've recently saw. Yesterday, I saw Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh, yeah, featuring Michael Rooker.
Yeah, Yondu.
Yeah, that was all filmed in Chicago, too, I believe.
Yeah, and you can tell it's really – it looks like – this is going to sound bad, but it looks like an episode of Unsolved Mysteries because the budget was so low. It's a good movie. It's genuinely scary because it's real.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day. I feel like, you know, I'm a bit of a skeptic when it comes to ghosts and monsters and the devil and all that stuff. So the movies that kind of stick with me the most are where it's a real person that's out there doing awful shit.
Yeah, I did a review about it. It's going to go up tomorrow. So I put some of my ideas in it about it. But that's one of the scarier movies of the 80s. I saw Creepshow during this time, which is
okay.
Still an awesome movie. I watched one called Mutilator. It's an 80s, early 80s slasher flick, but it has the most upbeat, happiest soundtrack that you'll ever hear. It's about typical story. Some college kids going on a vacation, just themselves at a house by the beach. During fall break is when they're going, and there's a song the entire time that plays, we're going on a fall break, gonna have a good time.
What I love especially is that, you know, when I want to go to the beach, the fall.
Exactly. Yeah.
Balmy temperatures, staying out on the beach in a full coat. That's my idea of a vacation.
That's where it's at.
Yeah. But it's funny that you mentioned things that have scary movies that have like an upbeat soundtrack, because I feel the same way about the original Wes Craven edition of Last House on the Left. I feel like there's a lot of like folky hippie jams in that movie that's awful and about serial killers and rape. Like, it's so out of whack and out of place, and it makes you kind of wonder how it is that it became so impactful, given how bumbled the soundtrack was. The rest of the movie is, you know, certainly unnerving and at points scary, especially I imagine at that age, era, being pretty scared of it. But cool.
Speaking of Wes Craven, I was going through all the horror movies, and I realized, and I mentioned this to you guys before we started recording, 1986 seems to be a big year for me as far as horror movies. Have any of you seen Deadly Friend?
I have not.
No, I haven't seen that one either.
That's Wes Craven, and it has, I can't think of her name, the actress that was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The TV show or the movie?
No, the movie.
Christy Swanson.
She's in it, and she has an abusive father, and her best friend is next door. And the father kills Christy Swanson, and her next door neighbor brings her back to life in a robot, and she goes around killing people.
Does the robot look like Christy Swanson, or
yes,
is it like
her.
A
pale version? I have seen that movie. Like, it's a little like round robot type of thing, and the rope doesn't someone shoot the robot with a shotgun or something like that?
I think so. I think she does get shot at, but I mean, it's her, but it's more of a pale version, like she's dead. But she gets even with her father, who was abusive to her and everything. And then I saw this when I was younger, and it bothered me that the father killed the daughter. I remember that. And then as I got older and recognized who Wes Craven was, I was like, oh, wow. So actually, I landed a DVD copy of this a couple weeks ago, and I'm planning on this weekend to sit down and give it a rewatch to see if it still holds up to what I remember when I was younger.
Deadly
Friend.
You kind of pigeonhole 86. What else about 86 was scary? Is that like your worst year at school or something?
No, I was going through, you know, researching to see what I want to talk about, and like I said, I hit 1986. I was like, there's a lot of them. And actually, I listen to them. I mean, it's sci-fi, but Aliens is a type of horror. That was 86.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a horror movie, yeah.
April Fool's Day?
I feel like I've seen April Fool's Day, but I don't remember which one that would be.
That one's pretty cool. It's a different take on a horror movie. I like that one. That one's really good. I forget about that one.
Yeah. And then, let's see, Chopping Mall.
I want to see Chopping Mall. I just, like, a friend just sent me the trailer for that. It's on Amazon. Like, I don't have Amazon Prime, but I know plenty of people who do, so I'm going to finagle my way into watching Chopping Mall soon.
And I actually got another release on DVD. I was cruising through Best Buy the other day, and it's $25, so, but they re-released, I believe it's in Blu-ray and everything, and I thought it was an odd choice to re-release in that format, but hey, you know, whatever. It's worth a watch. And then also threw up there Critters. I like Critters.
So would you say Critters is your favorite Gremlins knockoff? Because there was like a whole series of like almost Gremlins movies that came out around that time.
Yeah, there's like there was Critters, Ghoulies, Munchies.
Yeah. There was like another one that like started with an S. Like I want to say it was called Snickers, but obviously it can't be called Snickers.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Critters was one of my favorite. I think I liked part two the best, the main course.
Well, there's also Hobgoblins, which very famously was an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Mystery Science Theater, yeah. A really good one.
Yeah, one of the better. They actually made a sequel to that movie like a couple of years ago, too, which is crazy.
Huh. But, is it one of those sequels where they're kind of self-aware of how shitty it is? Because that always takes away from the fun.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's very, and it's a direct sequel. Like, they got almost the entire cast to reprise it, because I'm pretty sure the entire cast isn't doing shit these days.
Right.
But, yeah, it's same director, same actors, same puppets, too. Like, there's only the one that you can actually put your hand in, so the rest of them, they're, like, holding, like, teddy bears, or, like, do you remember those old My Monster dolls when we were kids? Like the My big
Pet
blue.
Monster?
Yeah. My Pet Monster, that's what it was called. Yeah. Yeah. Those things were pretty great. My pick, my favorite 80s horror movie, and I know, Nate, you wanted to touch on Friday the 13th, so it's going to come out pretty early here. The first one that actually happened in the 80s was Friday the 13th Part 2, which, as anyone who follows me on Twitter knows, is my favorite of the movies, the first one that actually features Jason as the killer, and probably the hottest of the slutty girls that they have in the entire series, and really great, still as like, you know, scary as the first one, just as gory and ridiculous. It was before the movie ratings board started to come down on Steve Miner or whoever would be directing these so hard that they had to, like, you know, go with kid gloves on all the other horror and body mutilation parts. So it managed to be scary and funny and all the good things that you look for in a summer 80s movie.
And that's the one that I talked with you about with the ending, right? Wasn't it part two? Where
Which
he's upstairs, he looks out the window.
No.
That was three.
Yeah, that's three. When she's like on the boat and she like looks out. Yeah, and then for some reason the mom jumps out of the water. Yeah.
Still, to this day, I like the ending though, because you're in the boat, everything's quiet, and by the time you look and you just see him staring out the window at you, and it's just eerie as shit. And then he goes busting out the door. I mean, it's well done for a slasher film.
It became sort of a pastiche that they would do in all the movies, because there was the one, I think it was 7, where he faces off with a girl who has mental powers, like she's a telekinetic, and like at the end, her dad, who drowned in Crystal Lake, pops out of the water to bring Jason down. Like it became just like a running gag, and then they did the same thing in the remake in like 2009 or whenever that movie came out.
I did not like the remake.
Yeah, it was just needless. Like,
I mean,
he runs,
he takes hostages. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, and he's got like Viet Cong tunnels running throughout.
What the fuck? Yeah, I couldn't do the remake.
Yeah,
I thought there was another reboot coming out this year, but I guess I read wrong.
Someone had said that to me as well. When I went on IMDb, all that I saw were like fan films that were in production, which is weird because I wouldn't think that IMDb would do fan films, but. There is actually a movie, I don't remember what it's called, that is on like demand right now, that is about a woman who, like, her mother was an actress in 80s horror movies that were basically the you know, off-brand version of Friday the 13th, and she was the main girl who then would like died in real life in a car accident. And through shenanigans along the lines of the Last Action Hero, she and her friends get sucked into the movie and get to finally like meet her mother in like because she died when, you know, she was like just a little baby, and gets to kind of fucking like bond with her in a horror movie setting. And since they've seen the movie, like they know all the tropes and they know how to get around it, and it looked like a pretty interesting comedy.
What's it called?
I'm looking it up right now. It's got the guy from Workaholics, Adam Devine.
It sounds interesting, but I feel like I also can tell you how it's going to end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's probably going to be not very good.
Sounds pretty awful.
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't really imagine that it's going to be... Oh, it's called The Final Girls. It was a 2015 movie that evidently nobody else saw. It's got Malin Ackerman, a.k.a. the Silk Spectre, in it, and Aaliyah Shawkat, maybe from Arrested Development, and nobody else of note that I recognize, at least by name, without doing a deeper dive into their IMDb presence. But yeah, you know, that kind of speaks to an interesting point. Like I had said, Nate, is, like myself, is a big fan of the Friday the 13th series. Do we think that Friday the 13th is the preeminent 80s monster slash slasher slash just the horror movie series? Because, you know, there was a lot of competition for that title. The Halloweens were predominantly in the 80s, the Nightmare on Elm Street films, arguably Aliens, although really it's just Aliens that appears in the 80s, so maybe that one doesn't come up there. You know, there was several sequels to Ghoulies, things like that. Like, do we think that Friday the 13th is the definitive 80s horror series?
I'd say it is without a doubt. It set the bar. You can see a lot of what started in Friday the 13th in modern horror movies. It's genuinely scary because I'd say its biggest competitor is Nightmare on Elm Street, I would say. But that's more – Freddy made it really funny, whereas Jason was just – straight up fear. It was really scary. And then the ideas that they had in there, the themes of promiscuity being a bad thing. Jason, eventually it became kind of corny with the unstoppable monster thing. But in the first three or four movies before Tommy became a part of the story, mm-hmm. he was just an amazing villain. He was the big bad.
See, I would put him, you know, I think that, yeah, it was definitely taken more seriously when he was just like a deformed man, as opposed to the unstoppable zombie he came when Tommy reinvigorated him with lightning in, like, I want to say that was number 6.
So is that where the series jumped the shark, part 6?
Oh, well, I think that it I like part 5. But I think it jumped the shark when it had that guy pretending to be Jason. Like, you know, why? Like, they were trying to set up a copycat thing. Like, the idea that I read about was that Tommy Jarvis, if you remember in that movie, goes to a halfway house because he's having hallucinations that Jason is appearing and killing all these people. And at the end, they do a sort of homage to the stupid jumping out of the water gag that appears in all of them when Tommy jumps up from like his hospital bed to like the Jason mask with like a knife in his hand and almost kills the, I don't know what you'd even call her, the counselor, for the kids at the halfway house. The idea long-term was supposed to be that Tommy is now the serial killer and he's stolen Jason's MO, and moving forward, he would have been the bad guy. And then that movie did so poorly that they actually said, no, you're putting Jason right back in this damn movie now. And that's when we got Unstoppable Zombie Jason.
Right. And is that the thing? Do you think that we could get another remake of Friday the 13th and actually go back to being scary? Or has there been so many sequels now where it's laughable, sort of like Chucky?
I don't think that it's laughable to the level of Chucky. Like, Chucky is an inherently silly premise. There's like, Maybe it's because I did not see Child's Play until like recently. I'd seen some of the sequels, but the first one I didn't see until like last Halloween, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was 1988.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's one that I saw at my local theater that does like second run and like, you know, it's a hipster theater. So it does all sorts of shit like this. But I saw it largely also taken out of it because it's also shot in Chicago, and you know, 1988 Chicago is very different from 2017 Chicago, right? And so there were parts of that were shot in like neighborhoods that I recognize, and they're like complete like war-torn hell zones in 1988, but now it's like, dude, those are the, like, you know, $500,000 apartments in that building. What are you talking about? This is the tenement that, yeah, you know, that they're living in. Yeah, Humboldt Park was really in bad shape in the 80s, but nowadays is not so bad. But yeah, I don't think that the Friday the 13th movies got that ridiculous until Jason got revived as a zombie, and that was in the 90s. That was already firmly like 94 or 5, around there.
But can we get another scary Jason, you think?
I think so, if they keep it to basics. They don't do any lightning tricks or nothing with him just taking a gunshot to the head and plowing forward, then yeah, they can make him scary again. He's just a demented, deformed guy who kills people. That's pretty scary.
Well, how do we think he then stacks up to a fairly similar character that preceded him, like preceded the original by a couple of months, as a matter of fact? With Mike Myers. Michael Myers is similarly a mask-wearing, silent psychopath. And we got two attempts at, you know, well, realistically, we got like four attempts at recreating him to be like scary and new with Halloween. I think it's 5, because in 4, they did that ill-fated Season of the Witch thing where the masks were the monsters.
That was
right,
3.
Three.
Okay, yeah. Then 4 on is when they tried to revive him. Then they tried to revive him again for H2O to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the first film. Then they did the remake with Rob Zombie that had its own little sequel that tried to humanize Michael Myers, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, those are horrible. Rob Zombie should be ashamed of himself.
Rob Zombie should have quit after House of a Thousand Corpses.
You didn't like Devil's Rejects better than House of a Thousand Corpses?
And I liked Devil's Rejects to a point. Where I think that went wrong was House of a Thousand Corpses had that horror supernatural feeling. Then it was like, here's the Devil's Rejects, now they're redneck killers. All the mystique and the supernatural stuff around Dr. Satan was completely thrown out the window, and now they're rednecks on the run. I thought that did a injustice to the story of House of a Thousand Corpses.
And see, I prefer the rednecks on the run killer story. Like, I thought that was more realistic and believable. And I thought that craft-wise, Rob Zombie had learned a lot from doing House of a Thousand Corpses that made The Devil's Rejects a much more watchable movie. Like, I think we talked about this in the past, that House of a Thousand Corpses is shot like a music video, and that's not how I want to watch a movie. I don't need to see like 8-second clips and like the one weird shaky camera effect over here and like, you know, asymmetrical imagery that doesn't make sense in the scene, but it's, you know, creepy or whatever. Like, it feels like it was a labor of love of Rob Zombie that he just put together over the course of a weekend with some friends, as opposed to Devil's Rejects feels like a road movie with these fucked up characters, which I more appreciate.
I would agree that Devil's Rejects is probably his best movie, but it's still awful. It's kind of like what we were saying earlier. It's I'm right-handed, so I'd rather you cut off my left hand than my right hand. I'm not a big fan. Rob Zombie, what makes me so mad about Rob Zombie is he's a fan. He's genuinely a fan of horror, and you can tell. But he just pisses on the genre. I really, really think he should be really ashamed of himself.
And what kills me is I've met him a couple times, And to hear him tell stories, he has these great ideas, and you're like, wow, this is going to look good. And then when it's been on the screen, you're like, well, what the hell happened here? He's got the vision. That he's told me a couple stories he had in mind, and they sound really good. But then when you see the film come out, I'm like, you missed something somewhere.
I mean, I think that he is sort of like Quentin Tarantino, and that he sees something and remembers like parts of it. He remembers elements of the movie that he remembers enjoying. So like, I remember when Blair Witch Project came out, he did some interview like with MTV, I want to say, that they asked him like, what do you think of this movie? He's like, I saw it. It was a little tame, kind of boring. It feels like they just did a really lame version of Cannibal Holocaust, and they asked him to explain Cannibal Holocaust. And he's like, oh, well, you know, it's another found footage horror movie about these people who go into the Amazon and then run into a series of a tribe of headhunters that had never been filmed before, and they never get seen again. And so you find the footage. And that really is, it's not technically false that that's what that movie is, but it really does not prepare you for what you're getting into with that fucking movie. Like, that's a hard watch. And largely because, well, it's a movie that I remember the first time that I saw it, when I already wanted to turn it off. It was like maybe even 20 minutes in, I had already said, man, that is a lot of rape in this movie.
It's pretty rapey.
Yeah, it's entirely too rapey. Well, one might say that all rape is too rapey, and they would not be wrong. This goes for a gusto and kind of overdoes it in the sense that they entirely overdo it. But the part that, you know, obviously that part is simulated, so you can kind of get around it. The part that I always find fucked up is that they show the legitimate animal deaths in those movies.
The turtles. I just saw it again last year, and I hadn't seen it since I was in middle school, maybe. Oh, so I thought that, yeah, I was a kid. It freaked me out. I heard all these stories about it. It can't be that bad. So I watched it last year, and I don't know if you remember when they
I remember the turtle. Yeah.
That was bad.
Because there's like the turtle, and then there's like a muskrat that they also kill.
Well, wasn't the director brought up on charges, or he was investigated for doing the film?
Yeah, I know it was banned in Italy, and then like at some international court wanted to like arrest him and like prosecute him, but like he proved that, you know, these are actors and nobody's actually being hurt here, and and like the animals that were killed were used for like food for the tribe, and like, you know, I mean, I get that. It's just, I don't need to actually watch a legitimate animal being killed for a damn movie. It's one of the big stumbling points I have with the original Friday the 13th, because they have that snake getting killed, and I fucking hate snakes. I am terrified of snakes. There's not a good thing in the world. If there's a good snake, it's one that's not anywhere near me. And yet I don't want to see a snake die. Like, for a fucking movie, it's a snake, dude. That's a living thing. Leave it alone.
Right.
Just throw it back into the woods.
Because of your skepticism about the devil is a serpent. That's why you don't want it to die.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Because I want to leave the option open. Like, if I need to contact the devil, you better leave that snake okay. I feel like if I needed to contact the devil, I don't know, I've probably said nicer things about him than other things in my life. One of my favorite bands is the Mountain Goats. It's a folk rock dude named John Darnielle, and he has a great song called "The Best Ever Death Metal Band Out of Denton," and it's you know, it's a touching ballad about a boy and his friend trying to start a death metal band, but their parents don't understand, and so one of them gets sent to like an institution, and so it's all about, you know, being your own person and not letting somebody tell you can't do something. But the reprise at the end of the song is just "Hail Satan tonight, hail Satan," like, you know, it's a little like sing along campfire song about, you know, giving the devil his due. Oh, well, in the words of The Simpsons, all the best bands are associated with Satan. But I guess that opens up a new avenue for our conversation here. Supernatural horror. You know, 80s was pretty big on all types of horror. Is there a favorite ghost or demon story that you have in mind for the 80s?
Ooh, I'll leave out the obvious Evil Dead, but I saw Waxwork recently at the Dismember the Alamo, and that's a pretty much straight-up horror movie. And in that, they had homages to Dracula, to Night of the Living Dead, to there was a pact with the devil. So basically, there were demons in it, and it was that was a really fun watch. It had Zach Galligan from Gremlins.
I saw that the first time a couple years ago because it was a lot of my friends hyped it up to me. I thought it was okay, but I want to watch it a second time to get a better opinion. I turned it off, and I wasn't as blown away as I thought it would be.
See, and I confuse it with House of Wax.
Oh, no.
Well, no, not the Paris Hilton House of Wax, obviously, but like the original. I don't know. My choice for 80s devil-centric movies, or, you know, monster movies, I guess, would be Phantasm. The thin man was creepy as hell. Or a tall man, I guess. I'm sorry. The thin man, I think, is the name of the monster from Pan's Labyrinth with the eyeballs in his hands, who eats the fairies and shit. Also a great movie, but one that stood with me, but not for any of its horror sequences. The tall man, that scene where she like wakes up and her bed is out in the field and he's like standing over her, scared the hell out of me as a kid. And it's really, I think, probably the only thing I really remember about the movie.
Well, the thing I remember about it is him just standing there and he points and he's like, "Boy," and it echoes and everything. That shit still trips me out when I see it on there.
I remember when I was, six or seven, I saw the poster for Phantasm 2. I had never heard of it, but just the poster itself frightened the hell out of me. And then the movie itself was, gave me nightmares for weeks.
I think the second one is my favorite one. And I remember second the poster, one is really good. It's the tall man, the ball is...
Yeah, the two, out, like, and the people's two faces on either side. Yeah, that was, I don't remember if I've seen any of the sequels, but there was definitely, like we talked about in the last podcast, I remember strolling through Blockbuster's horror movie section all the time and seeing like just the row of Phantasm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like, and those the image of the cover stands out to me, which I guess also reminded me of my love for Night of the Demons 2 with Angela. Though that might be the 90s, now that I think about it. That might have been like 92. So, removed from context in this conversation.
And a fun fact, in Walmart, if you're listening and you want to sponsor us, I'll take it. Give me a call. Hit me up on Twitter. You can go into Walmart, and I saw they have a whole box set of Phantasm, and I think it's only like $19, and it's all the films. So I own the first three, so I'm teetering on going and just buying the whole set anyway, just to have the other ones.
I mean,
That's interesting, Jason. You were talking about going through Blockbuster and looking at the movie covers. One thing that I remember a lot from the 80s is the covers for horror movies, because they were so outlandish back then. Like, yes, that's what I miss the most, because Netflix, it's not the same. You get a little thumbnail and you kind of have an idea, but those video cassette covers back in the day were they would just vicious. Pull you in. Yeah, they were bad. They were really
bad. I've got a story for you. I used to manage a Blockbuster in its dying days when I was finishing up college. And at Friday, Saturday night, you know, we had a line going to the back of the store. Well, it just so happens our horror section was in the middle where the line was. So we have families standing in line and they look down the aisle and there's all these scary ass cover boxes. So Friday and Saturday evening, right before we started getting busy, we'd have to go and turn the scarier boxes with the back facing out because we were getting so many complaints.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
and then on the back is where you have the scantily clad chicks, right?
Exactly.
Well, I was about to throw a similar story. A first date with my longest term girlfriend. We went to Blockbuster, and again, I'm a very big horror movie guy, and she became a very big horror movie person as well. And our very first date, this was, you know, why we lasted so long. We saw the trailer, the box for I Spit on Your Grave.
Wow.
And
she said, hard one too.
She said, "Let's watch that." I was like, what? Okay. Yeah. So
have you seen it?
Yes, I've seen it.
And you said, yeah, let's go watch it?
I hadn't seen it at that point. I knew the reputation for it.
Okay, that's why I said it. I didn't know if you saw it before.
Yeah, but we watched it together. We finished the movie. That was a good sign that we were kids, like good connection, because she didn't run out of the theater, out of the house like, oh my god, what the fuck? Like,
and you said she became your longest term girlfriend, right?
Yep, we were together for like almost 11 years. So yeah,
I spit on your grave is the secret.
Yeah, you know, anybody's out there looking for love, I spit. Yeah, you know, well, it's not a good idea to bust it out on the first date, but if it works on the first date, it's probably going to work. Like, you know, that relationship's probably going to go okay.
You topped my first date movie. One of the ones that I had on my first date was Natural Born Killers.
Oh, sure. But that one's also sort of a love story. This,
not when you're taking a Christian girl to see it.
Well, sure. I feel like I Spit on Your Grave would be a harder sell for that crowd anyway. But with, again, all of the rape and the castration and the bloody vicious revenge, but we are coming up on our time. So, Nate, as we often ask our guest, today we get to do one of my favorite sequences, which is Defend Your Poor Taste, where we talk about a guilty pleasure, something that you feel pretty strongly about that people can kind of learn from, whether that be a movie, a cultural event, a TV series, whatever it is going to be, comic books, anything. With that in mind, Nate, defend your poor taste. What you got?
Okay, well, here's the disclaimer. I'm not defending the actions that happened. However, I feel that it would be okay if Chris Benoit was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. The reason I believe so is most recently, Jimmy Snuka was pretty much convicted, or not convicted. He was found guilty of committing a murder. We have Stone Cold Steve Austin, who did beat a woman. We have Hulk Hogan, who is a racist and not just a casual dropping of a word. He said some pretty horrific things. These guys, and I'm not saying they should be removed from the Hall of Fame. They're all in there. I'm saying put Benoit in also. I don't have a ceremony for him. Don't put him at the induction ceremony. That's about fun and entertainment. But when in 25 years, when they release WWE 75 and the book, their little dictionary or encyclopedia, have Benoit's name in there in the Hall of Fame.
I will say that Hulk Hogan was removed from the Hall of Fame.
Yes, he was.
I am not sure if Jimmy Snuka was, though. He might still be in there.
After he died, they had a in memoriam for him on Raw, so...
Yeah, that felt wrong. I feel like that's specifically because his daughter works there. But yeah, he killed that woman. That's not cool. I mean, from a technical standpoint, inarguably, Chris Benoit was one of the best wrestlers out there. Like, he was, he was one of my favorites when I was watching in like the late 90s, early aughts. You know, I was really that ending of, I think it's WrestleMania 20. Where he and Eddie Guerrero are in the ring and they're both the champ and they're like hugging and crying as the confetti rains down. That's a beautiful segment. Do I think that he belongs in the Hall of Fame because of his skills? The thing is, I feel like the Hall of Fame, in my personal opinion, the Hall of Fame is for like aggrandizing things. It's sort of like the difference between like, I don't know if this is a fair comparison or not. I haven't really thought it all the way through, but like, you know how there's been all of these people tearing down Confederate monuments in the South nowadays. And, you know, the argument from the people who support the Confederate monuments being up is that, oh, that's culture, that's heritage. But, like, the argument logically from the other side is that, well, they were secessionists. They were traitors to the United States. You don't put those – you don't honor those people with, like, statues in the middle of the country. You put it in a museum so that people learn about it because it's not something to be proud of to have, you know, killed so many American citizens. Like, and with the case of Chris Benoit, like, yeah, I can appreciate – the matches that he had as being really good. He was a great technical wrestler. He's one of the best. But it's kind of hard to divorce the actions when he, you know, literally murdered his wife and son. I don't know. That's my opinion. Dave, what do you think?
I think it'd be a PR nightmare if they did it, and I don't see it happening. Is even in the later video games, like the Shears version of 2K, whatever, is he in this one?
No.
Yeah, he's on the cover. You didn't see?
No, I don't play. I'm so out of reach with wrestling, I couldn't tell you what he is. So I'm guessing he's not in it.
He's basically been scrubbed from all things WWE. As a matter of fact, I have the network, and if you try to search for a Chris Benoit match, nothing comes up.
Can't find it, right.
Right, and like I went back to, I think it was WrestleMania X8, or X7 rather, and Kurt Angle fought Benoit on that show, and it says on the description, because, you know, you can jump to different matches and it'll say description. It says, Kurt Angle has a singles match. Like,
yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. They definitely don't want anything Benoit related on there. I think it's almost progressive on their point not to go back and remove everything with Chris Benoit on it. But I feel like they realize that that's a lot of content that they would be like throwing in the garbage because of this guy. Right.
But I mean, he killed his wife and his child. I don't think he belongs anywhere near a Hall of Fame.
Well, wrestling, it's not real or whatever, but in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, he was in before everything happened. He had been inducted, and then they voted whether they should remove him or not. And by the smallest margin, it was like 51-49%. They kept him in, and to this day, he's still in. Now, I know it's apples and oranges, the two Hall of Fames, and the WWE Hall of Fame is more about entertainment.
Yeah.
So based on that, definitely he should not be in. But when they induct people like Fujinami and the Rock and Roll Express, there's no real entertainment. And most people won't even know who that is.
Yeah.
So no statues for him. Don't mention his name. Nothing like that. Just on the website, you know, maybe just he's a name. Yeah, exactly. Don't ever, ever honor him in any way because, well, obvious reasons, you don't honor him. But
wouldn't that be honoring and put him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I guess that's my argument.
I'm kind of half and half on, because if you're going to make it a real Hall of Fame, as real as wrestling can be, if you're going to honor people's accomplishments for what they did in the mat or on the mat, then yeah, you have to separate the two. But based on just what he did as a ring personality, you should be in there.
I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody can argue that he wasn't a great wrestler. I think that it's one of those things like Hulk Hogan getting fired for dropping the N-word in several aggressive ways on those leaked audio tapes. And I don't know, and that conversation with his son where he says, we're cool guys. Like, no, you're not. Go the hell away.
Well, I mean, Ultimate Warrior, that's a really bad one.
Yeah, I don't really appreciate the Ultimate Warrior being thrown about. And I also don't understand why his wife has become the face of, like, breast cancer research for the WWE. But they're also partnered with Susan G. Komen, which is a garbage organization.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so moving along from there, let's talk about weekly picks. Guys, we'll start with Nate. What are you reading? What are you watching? What are you playing? What do you think our listeners should be checking out this week?
Okay, well, obviously Stranger Things is coming up, but I just finished The Deuce. The season finale is going to be this Sunday, but it's all up on HBO Go, HBO Now, whatever it is that you use. If you've seen The Wire, then you'll love The Deuce. If you haven't seen The Wire, then you need to watch The Wire. But the Deuce is arguably, and I'm not a Game of Thrones person. I didn't watch Game of Thrones, but I am going to say that The Deuce is the best thing HBO put out on Sunday nights this year, of anything that they put out. And I'm a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan. Curb Your Enthusiasm, I've been watching that. Playing, I'm a huge fan of the Lego games, and the best deal I ever got on a game was Lego Marvel Superheroes. I got it for $10 on a flash sale on the PlayStation store.
Nice.
Yeah, really good deal. So I'm really waiting on Lego Marvel Superheroes 2. So in the meantime, I've been playing Infamous Second Son, because I've never completed it, and it's fun. It's super fun. It's a short game. The powers are really neat, and I think it has cool characters in it. I started playing Borderlands just because it's also really fun and silly. Borderlands 2, I was playing that. And movie-wise, I've just been doing the 31 Days of Halloween. I've watched, besides what we've mentioned, I've watched Raw, which is a French, like, pseudo-zombie movie. I saw Ghost Watch, which was kind of a big hoax in England. Geez, what else have I seen? I've seen a lot of movies. I can't even remember. I've been watching something every single day. I've seen so many horror movies. But reading, honestly, I'm super behind on comics. I'm so far behind that I'm actually on the third issue of Scott Pilgrim versus the World right now. So,
oh wow, like the collected manga editions or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's how far behind I am. So,
all right, Dave, how about you? What are your picks for this week?
My picks for this week, I haven't been able to watch a lot of movies. I've been playing a lot of movies in the background since I've been writing a lot. I did get my hands on, do you remember the old 80s cartoon called Cops?
Yeah. Yeah, aren't they like robots or something like that? Like
a couple of them, they all have like cybernetic parts.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that's like, Cops is an acronym, right? And like it stands for like cybernetic operations or something along those lines.
Right. Well, I found the complete set. I went to the Hampton Comic Con here in Hampton, Virginia over the weekend, and someone was selling the whole set, 65 episodes, like 24 hours long for $15. So I've started watching a couple episodes of that just because I've missed that show. I'd actually like to see that come back as a comic book also. And then I attempted to watch Stranger Things because I'm behind on it. My Fire Stick is having issues, so I need to get my Netflix hooked up on my Xbox One so I can continue with that. What have I been playing, Jason?
I'm going to say that you've been playing Barbie's Dream Princess, going through. Maybe it's FIFA, I guess, that you're still playing.
I tried to give FIFA a break this week, and in the spirit of the show, I went back and revisited the old.
They Nintendo. Keep pulling you in.
I'm soccer junkie. I love FIFA, but I went back and played the Friday the 13th game on Nintendo, and that game's hard as shit. Still to this day, that is a hard game to get through. And also played around with Nightmare on Elm Street, which is just silly, much like the movies. And then as far as reading, I have a stack of comics that I need to get to eventually, but Titans Books sent me a copy of Kim Newman's Video Dungeon, the collected reviews, and it's like 500-something pages, and it's all reviews on B-rate movies.
Ooh.
So look for... Fun. What's that?
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. So I've never quite gave my thoughts on a review book, so it'll be interesting to see why I come up with this, but look for it soon on our website, adventuresinporttaste.com.
Yeah, plug.
Plug.
Yeah, along the similar lines, I haven't read it in a while, but it reminds me of, we mentioned Mystery Science Theater 3000 earlier, and Mike Nelson has a book of film criticism from like the mid to late 90s called Mike Nelson's Movie Mega Cheese. And I remember just like busting out laughing from reading. And that's one of the only books that's ever done that to me. So can't hype that up enough, but I'm a huge MST3K guy. So I'm probably going to like anything they do. Watching. I made the impossible journey of watching every single Treehouse of Horror during my 31 days, and I did most of them in a single day. And some of those late era ones are just so bad. But there was one little beacon of hope there. There was one that was called, like, Dial M for Murderousness or something like that. It was one of their many homages to Hitchcock. And it was a pretty late season episode, and it was really good. Like, the art direction of it was really fantastic. It's all in black and white, and they do a lot of sight gags referencing several movies from Hitchcock, including this like 3-minute sequence that just goes through some of the lesser known ones. Like, you don't get the obvious North by Northwest or Vertigo references. You get some things like Rope and Christine. Christine was the Stephen King one about the car.
Rebecca.
Rebecca. That's what I was going for. really cool. I recommend it a bunch. The rest of them can toss. But 1 through 6, I'll say, are good. And then after that, it gets to garbage, regardless of Dave's opinion about the Homer in 3D episode.
Yeah, I heard that. I was really surprised. That 3D one's really good.
Yeah, I like it.
And you know what? They started with a 3D on the new Horde that was just on this past Sunday, which I sent Jason a message and he wasn't watching it. The beginning sort of starts out with that 3D animation again. But the actual treehouse wasn't too bad. The beginning, the first story, they actually do The Exorcist, which was pretty entertaining. So I'm curious to see what you think of that, Jason, when you watch it.
Yeah, it should go up on FXX at some point, and I'll check it out then.
So, Nate, you liked the 3D Homer then?
I did. I remember watching it at the time, and I was just blown away by it. I thought it was really original. It's a funny story, and it is scary. I read a book. I saw one at Barnes & Noble about the fourth dimension, and since I couldn't picture it in my – obviously, I couldn't think of it in my – it scared the hell out of me. So seeing a two-dimensional character trying to live in a three-dimensional world, I could kind of relate to it. So I thought it was really cool.
I thought that there was just a lot of great lines in that episode. Professor Frank saying, no, you can't go in there. There could be cubes the size of gorillas and other such large items in there. Like, yeah, fantastic. But anyway, beyond that, I've been also doing my 31 Days of Horror. Watched The Faculty last night. Gonna explore, see what I can find tonight. Haven't really committed to anything scary. And reading, I have been given the unenviable task of looking through the first trade for America, which I guess is America's Most Hated Book. And short of it, its very obvious attempt to be the most woke book out there, I don't think it's as bad as everybody says. Like, it's annoying and tries to be too hip and forward-thinking, and all of the pronouns are carefully chosen and all of this stuff. Like, it's... I don't know. I don't think it's worth the derision that it received, even if I am rolling my eyes every so often at certain decisions that the characters make, because it's very clear. Like, someone was like, oh, yeah, we're going to fucking rock everyone's world with this. They're not ready for America. Like, yes, we are. It's not that big a deal. And playing nothing new. I have not... Yeah, I've been playing FIFA. I play as Westham.
Westham?
Yeah, man. Oh, you want me to say West Ham?
I was just waiting to see what you said.
I only know it from the IT crowd, because I can't talk like a proper man, as they say. Who is this guy? Is he having a laugh? Yeah. So that's going to do it for our time here at Adventures in Podtaste, the AIPT podcast. I think I'm going to say it that way pretty much every time from now till eternity. Feel free to call me out if I don't do it in the comments. Want to thank our guest, Nate. Nate, how can the good folks listening find you on the internet?
You can find me at Twitter at Paticus Finch. It's PATTICUS. FINCH. So for all you To Kill a Mockingbird fans, there you go. And then you can find me on Facebook at Patrick Muir, and that's Muir Chavez, because I took my wife's last name. So I'll take any suggestions for movies. Just I've been watching horror movies literally for like a month now, so anything other than horror I would be glad to review.
All right, and Dave, where can the folks find you?
Now you can find me on Twitter at Psychotic, and that's spelled S-Y-C-O-T-I-C.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Felix Lancaster, and you can find all of us at AdventuresInPoorTaste.com, AIPTComics.com, if you're into brevity. Guys, thanks for being on the show. Folks at home, thanks for listening, and have a happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.